Hi, everyone. Tonight we've got another special treat for you. Again, when I first announced this teleconference format, I said that I wanted to bring you some of the top teachers on the planet, and specifically some of the people who have really influenced me in my life. And tonight we have a guest trainer who has definitely done that. He has spoken to actually stadiums full of people, sharing the stage. I saw him with the likes of Charlton Heston, and Barbara Bush was on that stage, and Zig Ziglar, and he's considered one of the top marketing and sales wizards in the entire world. As most of you know, I believe marketing is probably the single most important key to business success. And our guest tonight is also a best-selling author. He's written several of the most successful infomercials that have ever appeared on television. He's gifted in his understanding of virtually every type of media and sales approach like nobody else I've ever seen. And he has hundreds of students that have gone on to become very successful and even wealthy in their own business, mostly because of what he's taught them. He is a no BS, meat and potatoes kind of guy who tells it like it is. And his information is best described by two words, I would say, it works. So please welcome to Success Tracks, direct from Phoenix, Arizona, the one and the only Mr. Dan Kennedy. Dan, can you take it away, please?
I can, Harv. You sound like you've been studying the Ed McMahon school of introduction there from the old Johnny Carson show.
Well, we try.
Well, it sounded like a pretty enthusiastic vocal group, so I look forward to when we get to the Q&A at the end. I'm going to talk about what we call magnetic marketing, and I thought the order that we would go through things tonight, I'll quickly define what our type of marketing is all about, and talk a little bit about different applications. And then there are three key principles or component parts, I guess, that we use anytime we build a marketing system, and we'll spend the majority of our time on those. The goals that that I have adhered to personally in my marketing and that I work with my clients on when we build a marketing system include all of these. One is to be in the attraction mode, not the pursuit mode, to set up systems, procedures, processes, to use tools to attract ideal prospects or customers or clients to us rather than pursuing them. And second on the list, quite often we're using these marketing systems as much to screen, sort, and qualify as to attract, because when these methods are used correctly, they tend to generate large numbers of leads or prospects, often much greater quantities than people are used to. And then they get the wonderful opportunity to start to shoo people away in the process as well and let the process sift and sort rather than them doing it. I was just, for example, with a financial planning firm, a client of mine in Toronto, and their average initial interview with a new client takes 3 hours. And they've got four or five people who can do these very well, and so their capacity is limited. Obviously, you can do the math and figure out for yourself how many interviews each person can do in a day times the number of people in the office times the number of days in the week. And so it's critically important to only be doing those interviews with the perfect prospect. And with methods such as we'll talk about tonight, we've been able to cut the number of prospects who actually get through the process and get to talk to them in person and subsequently get face-to-face with them. We've been able to cut that number in half, however, then take the conversion rate of prospect to client from an already pretty high number of 55% to 80%.
Wow.
So attract, qualify. Then the third thing that we look for when we build a system is to bring prospects or customers or clients, whatever term you want to use, forward who are predisposed to do business with you. as opposed to shoppers who are going to get information from you and get information from four or five comparable vendors and compare, which leads us to the fourth thing on the list, which is an opportunity to sell in a competitive vacuum so that the prospect has come to you predisposed to do business with you and only with you, perhaps because they perceive you as an expert, perhaps because we've created positioning that differentiates you from all of their competition. For one reason or another, you get to sell in a competitive vacuum. And then the next thing on the list is so that you get to sell with no price resistance. And in many cases, the people that I work with wind up having the highest prices of anybody in their particular businesses or industries in their markets, and yet get to sell with the least price resistance of any of their competitors. We believe that in 99% of all transactions, price can be made irrelevant. Next to last on the list is having a marketing system that allows for the greatest possible leverage of your time and talents. One of the worst things, in my opinion, that a salesperson can do, or a professional like a chiropractor or a dentist or an optometrist, or most business owners can do, is put themselves in the position of having to say the same things over and over and over again in the early stages of the sales process. So we look for ways to leverage time and talents. And then last thing on the list is to take a lot of the stress and a lot of the burnout out of the marketing and sales process and make it more enjoyable. I like groups to know, when we start to talk about applications for this kind of a system, I do a lot of one-on-one consulting work, and we track, and in the last 3 years alone, this will be my 25th year, but in the last 3 years alone, hands-on, I've applied and created these kinds of systems for clients in 136 different product, service, and business categories. So you'll be hard-pressed to be in anything, or for that matter, imagine anything where this sort of thing doesn't apply. I know that from having talked to Harv that some of you on the line probably are involved in MLM or network marketing, and the strategies also apply there. Over the last few years, I've had two corporate clients in that industry, and one who's the top distributor in a very large company. And so we've taken these same principles and built marketing systems there. It pretty much doesn't matter whether you sell big-ticket items or small-ticket items, whether you sell to mom and pop in the living room or the CEO in the corporate boardroom, whether you go to them or you need to get them to come to you, whether you're dealing with tangible products or intangible services, pretty much none of that matters. When we get to the fundamental principles of these kinds of marketing systems. In most sales applications, the main benefit of using this kind of marketing is you are able to completely eliminate cold prospecting. In most other businesses, the main benefit is to cut all the waste out of advertising and make the dollars that you spend in advertising and marketing much more effective. So with that sort of preliminary information laid out, let me take you through the three component parts or the three categories of information that we confront whenever we build a marketing system. And I'll list them for you and then come back and talk about each one. The list is, number one is the marketing message. What is it that you say to your marketplace, past, present, and future, customers, clients, or prospects, that is compelling, that forces people to pay attention, that cuts through the clutter, that creates interest, and so forth. Secondly, are the markets, the target markets. Think of it as who you choose to deliver your message to, and by very deliberate strategy, who you decide not to invest time or money in delivering your message to. So the first thing we need to talk about is the message. The second thing is who the message is aimed at and delivered to. And then third is the media, which you might think of as message delivery mechanism. I mean, that's all advertising media is. That's all direct mail is. That's all the internet is. That's all manual labor prospecting is. It's all a means of delivering a marketing message to a chosen market. And we have some media that we prefer over others and uses of media. So those are the three big issues. So backtracking, let's talk about message first. And the first thing I would call your attention to is as you look at your own or other companies and other people's advertising and marketing, often what you will find is that they are out there with no real message at all, making a lot of noise, but not having anything much to say. And that's kind of an obvious mistake when I say it. It's not sometimes so obvious to see it. But if you look at a lot of advertising, even in highly competitive advertising environments like the telephone directory, you will often see what we call business card ads that really contain nothing much more than the basic information that you might put on a business card. And in this day and age, the last statistics I saw, the average adult consumer in a typical day will be exposed to over 25,000 advertising and marketing messages by all sorts of media. And so there's enormous clutter. And in order to attract and hold attention in that kind of an environment, message is critically important. When you build a marketing message, we could be on the phone for 10 hours talking about all of the component parts, but I'm going to give you some key ones here. And the first is, I'll give you your first little homework assignment. This is a question that you should give some time to considering and pondering long after we're done this evening. It is, I believe, the single most important question anybody's ever going to ask you about your product, your service, or your business, as long as you are involved in that business. Because a really good answer to this question, as I'll demonstrate to you, gives you the key to the marketing vault. It really makes everything else that follows infinitely easier when you have a great answer to this question. The question is, why should I, your prospect, choose to do business with you versus any and every other option available to me in your category? Let me give it to you one more time. Why should I, your prospect, choose to do business with you versus any and every other option available to me in your category? That behooves, by the way, making a list of all of the other options. The technical term for the answer to that question is most often expressed by marketing folk as a unique selling proposition. And getting to a unique selling proposition is coming up with a great answer to that question. Now, let me give you a model. And what you do with models, of course, is examine them closely, and you'll take this model of a unique selling proposition and hold it up against yours and see if yours is as good. And whether you have something to hold up against it or not at this point, or whether you quickly determine that yours is not nearly this good, the place to start is by looking at examples like the one I'm going to give you for inspiration. This particular unique selling proposition has had, to my knowledge, the greatest impact on the consumer marketplace of any in the last decade and a half. It took a failing business. This unique selling proposition was actually invented by a college kid. There were two kids, orphans. They bed in an orphanage, determined to go to college. No family resources, obviously. No great athletic skills, therefore no scholarships, average grades. The plan that the more entrepreneurial of the two hatched was they found this failing crummy little retail business on the edge of campus that the owner was delighted to let them have with no money down just to get out from under his bills. And the plan was that the one kid would run the business during the day while the other one went to college, and then the other one would run the business at night while the other one went to night school. And they'd do everything themselves, and they'd even sleep on cots in the back room in order to conserve money, and this is how they would get through school. And shortly into this plan, the business was continuing to hemorrhage money, not make it, and one partner bailed out on the other. The one who stuck around, determined to honor his commitments and make this thing work, shortly thereafter invented an idea, really expressed as a unique selling proposition for this business. And on the strength of that unique selling proposition, expressed, I believe, in 8 words, he not only turned the business around and made a failing small business a successful small business, but in fairly short order, in his product category, he dominated business in his town, his state, North America, and many English-speaking countries of the world. Turned his entire industry upside down, and I would quickly say this is low-tech, not high-tech. This is a fairly mundane product in a already well-established, saturated, and highly competitive category. His unique selling proposition, in fact, was so powerful that for almost 10 years, you could go out anywhere in North America and stop 100 people at random on the street and play word association with them. What's the first thing that comes into your mind when I say blank? Give them the generic equivalent of his business, and 80 or more of the 100, the first thing on the tip of their mind and on the tip of their tongue was the proprietary brand name of his business. So if we go out into whatever town or city you're from, or if you're a business-to-business marketer, if we go to a trade show populated by your customers, and we stop 100 people at random, give them the generic equivalent of whatever it is that you do, and 80 or more of each 100 immediately tell us about you by name and what a great job you do, your market share is going to look pretty good. And that's the power of a great, unique selling proposition. And having said all that, that should not only make you want to guess his, which you may very well have done, but it should motivate you to microscopically analyze it and want to use his model and others like it to strengthen or build your own. His was fresh hot pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less, comma, guaranteed. And on the strength of that unique selling proposition, Tom Monahan turned his industry upside down. According to Fortune magazine, he became one of the 1,000 wealthiest citizens on the planet in under 10 years. When you analyze it, as you should, I'll point out a couple of things. First is you will notice how narrowly Tom defined his position in the marketplace. He didn't try and be all things to all people. He picked competitive positioning. In his case, there's 52 ways to build a unique selling proposition that I teach. The one he used is called opportunity gap exploitation. He identified the one thing that all of his competitors did badly and that annoyed the consumers, and he focused on it and fixed it, which was the delivery issue. Pretty much prior to Domino's, if you ordered pizza for home delivery, you usually got either cold pizza, old pizza, or no pizza. And so he didn't try and be all things to all people. There's no mention of Mama's recipe from the old country. There's no mention of only using sun-dried tomatoes gathered from the east side of the mountain on Tuesday. There's not even any mention of good pizza, specifically in the USP. Instead, he focused on this single issue. The second thing he did is, sometimes I call it gutsy marketing, sometimes I call it accountability. He really gave the consumer a way to hold his feet to the fire. With the races on, it'll be there in 30 minutes or less. And very few marketers are willing to do this. but those who do almost always gain competitive advantage in the marketplace. And then last, a guarantee. And he took all three of those things and stitched them together in this tight, concise statement we call a unique selling proposition, and literally turned his industry upside down and made himself a very wealthy fellow. So you want to look at the core of your own marketing message and see whether or not you have a true USP. And if not, it's the first thing you want to work on, because it's the foundation of everything else that goes into a good marketing message. Let me give you a second marketing message item. Actually, these are two that are linked together, and they address one of the great flaws in the way most people do their advertising and marketing. The way most people do their advertising and marketing, the way most people do their advertising and marketing is what we call single reason for response. They give people one reason and one reason only to respond to them, and that typically is because the prospect is ready to buy what it is that they sell. And that leaves out a large number of people who are not ready right now but will be ready. And so what we do is called multiple reason for response. And our objective is to open more doors, certainly to open a door for the people who are ready to do business this instant, but also to open doors for people who are not ready to do business this instant but are at least intrigued about our message, curious about our message, thinking about doing business in this category. You know, in every product and service category, there's a gestation time from when somebody first has a first impulse to when they act on that impulse. In a very event-driven service business like, say, plumbing, the gestation period's pretty darn short. Leak, rush to the phone, call a plumber. But in a business, say, like automobiles, the gestation period is a bare minimum of 3 weeks. That's a pretty quick buyer. That's the typical pattern is shop and compare prices for 2 weekends, buy on the third weekend, all the way to 6 months. And so if you take a six-month time frame, at the moment that a prospect sees your message, they may not be ready in the car business. They may not be ready to come to a lot to look at cars, to test drive yet, but they're thinking about it. They're getting ready. So we create multiple reasons for response in order to invite more of these people to raise their hands and identify themselves as prospects getting ready to buy, so that we can then communicate with them repeatedly, deliver good information to them, build trust, build rapport, and ultimately be the vendor of choice by the time they are ready to buy. One of the ways that we often do multiple reason for response is by offering information that you do not have to be ready to buy to want. For example, in real estate or in the mortgage business, and in a lot of financial service categories as well, we'll design free reports, free booklets, free audio tapes that have intriguing titles and that have appealed to people, again, who may not yet be ready to list and sell their house or buy a house or invest in mutual funds, but they're thinking about it. They're gathering information. And so I say to most business people that everybody should be an information marketer as well as a marketer of their primary product or service, because information is a way to get to people early in this gestation process. I'll give you a quick example in a second that encompasses both multiple reason for response and then the linked issue, which is multiple means of response. Again, many advertisers and many marketers make the mistake of giving people only one means of response. And most often, that is their calling their regular office telephone them. And for every person who picks up the phone and makes that call, there's some number who almost do, but talk themselves out of it. And the reason is because they know they're going to get a live human being on the phone, and that live human being is going to try and get them to do something. And so you begin to see techniques used like additional alternative telephone numbers offering free recorded messages, which are very non-threatening. The caller knows he's going to get more information, but he's not going to confront a live human being. He has anonymity. He can bail out and run and hide at a moment's notice, all of that. You'll see drive to websites. You'll see fax on demand systems, different means of response and different means of getting additional information for the prospect. So an example, a dentist client of mine running newspaper ads for cosmetic dentistry had a reasonably successful and reasonably profitable ad, but only single reason for response. You had to be at the point that you were ready to come in for a diagnostic exam and a presentation of what could be done for you. And only single means of response, you had to pick up the phone and call the office and talk to a staff person who would, of course, immediately attempt to schedule you for an appointment. Making no other changes in the ad except adding a second phone number with a copy line saying, if you're not yet ready to schedule your consultation but would like more information, you can call this free recorded message anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and offering an additional second telephone number. And that free recorded message, of course, is warm and friendly and reassuring, but it then offers the option, instead of scheduling a consultation, of leaving your name, address, and telephone number to be sent a free information packet, which includes printed matter and a videotape. Now, making no other change to the advertisement, here's what happens. Total response goes up by about a third, just shy of 33%. Most of the increase in response goes to the free recorded message, naturally. And of those who leave their name, address, and telephone number and are sent information packets and follow-up mailings, 75% of those subsequently schedule appointments and come in. And the conversion rate on those from prospect to patient is double what is the conversion rate from prospect to patient of the person who does it in one step. So it's incredibly efficient. It effectively takes every dollar they spend on advertising and now makes it worth $1.33. And it increases the total lead flow and increases the overall quality of the lead. So that's multiple reason for response, multiple means of response. Let's call that message for a second. We'll see about time. We might loop all the way back to message because there are other message component parts we could talk about, but I want to make sure I don't run out of time in laying out the entire three parts of this for you. So let's assume we have a great marketing message. At its core is a great, unique selling proposition. We've designed multiple reason and multiple means. We've done all the smart things we can do with a message. Now the next question is, who do we deliver the message to? And by very deliberate strategy, who do we not deliver that message to? There's a word that in most contexts is an offensive, a bad word. But in marketing, it's a million-dollar word. And the word is discriminate. And what savvy marketers work at doing is discriminating as early in their process as possible against low probability prospects in favor of the minority of high probability prospects, so they get to devote the majority of their time or money resources delivering their message, talking only to the highest possible probability prospects, people most likely to buy. There are a couple of strategies about all that. They are all based on the fact that privacy in today's world is dead. That may be bad news to you if you value your privacy, but it's very good news to marketers. Never in the history of the world has as much information and data been available to use in finding and selecting high probability prospects. I tell people, you know, if you say to me that my utopian prospect, my ideal customer, is a one-legged midget male with a industrial engineering degree, lives in a duplex, has four kids, three dogs, two television sets, one car, bowls in a league on Wednesday night, I can get you a list of those people in any postal code you want. It's not going to be a very big list, but we can get the list. Let me tell you something interesting. There are, when you go to target prospects, and this is where you get all your leverage, is doing target marketing rather than mass marketing. There's really only two options. There's only two things to learn how to do. One is you use all of the information that has been assembled by others and is available in the world of commercial mailing lists. And I'll come back to that in a second. The only other option is to do what's called pure lead generation advertising to get the right person to raise their hands. And if you've ever seen a personals ad, nobody will ever admit to running one or answering one, but I'm sure you've seen them. A personals ad is pure lead generation. It describes who you want. It generally says a couple of things about who you don't want. The incentive for response is implied. So a personals ad is like, you know, 38-year-old, a divorced woman seeks male, 18 to 22, must have job, car, clean breath, no dogs, no kids, non-smoker. That's the purest form of lead generation ad anybody could ever write. When you translate that into business advertising, it means that you do not advertise your product, you do not advertise your service, you do not advertise your company. You advertise for the person you want to get them to raise their hand, and typically your incentive for response now can't be implied. It has to be specified, and it will typically be some kind of free information. All right, I have one client right now that runs an ad where there is a list of 12 qualifications you should meet before you answer the ad. The entire ad is built around those 12 qualifications and then an offer of free information. So it's heavily qualifying and attempting to build a list of high probability prospects. So those are the only two things you can learn to do, the only two things that lay the groundwork for targeted marketing. In the world of commercially available lists, I'll teach you one quick thing. There's a resource, and 90% of all business owners and salespeople and marketers are too lazy to use it. And small business people particularly are intimidated by it and don't use it. The resource is available at most major city public libraries. It covers Canada as well as the United States. You won't find it in a minor market, so I heard some of you earlier on the call who are 2,000 miles away from civilization. You know, you're going to have to hook the dogs to the sled and head into town. But at any major city library, you can also buy it, but it's very expensive. It's a resource called Standard Rate and Data Service. Its initials are SRDS, and just about any business librarian, if you ask for SRDS, will take you either to a computer database that you can use on their computer or a big wall full of directories. Either way, part of SRDS is a compilation or a directory of every commercially available mailing list in the world, with copious detail about it. Who's on it, how many of them, where they came from, what genders they are, how many are male, how many are female, how many don't know, what ages they are, household income, all sorts of information. And so for just about anything that you might wish to market, there's going to be a plethora of these lists to choose from. And there are a number of kinds of lists. One is called basic demographic information. And demographic lists tend to have been compiled from public records and will have be statistical information about what groups of people have in common. So it might be, again, excuse me, I'm a little frog in my throat, as they say. It might be ages or income. Then there are, which is much more useful, psychographic information or behavioral information. These are response lists, what people buy, what magazines they subscribe to, that sort of thing. So let me give you an example. In the weight loss industry, some years ago here in the United States, I don't know if it's true in Canada or not, but many of our states began to make available their driver registration lists, their license data translated into mailing lists. Everybody in the weight loss industry was temporarily excited because what this means is you can go in Chicago, in any zip code in Chicago you want, you can get a list of females if you want to isolate females, which 80% of the weight loss industry does. You can essentially get short, dumpy women because you can get their height and you can get their weight. And everybody thought, hey, isn't this neat? Now, that's a demographic list. And for some purposes, that's fine. But what many marketers in the weight loss industry quickly discovered is that this was not as good a list as it initially appeared, and here's why. What you knew about the people on that list was, if you spec them as I said, is you got a list of short, dumpy women who live in Chicago. But you don't know if they care about being overweight. You only know that they are. So if you turn to response lists, now in SRDS what you'll find, for example, is the list of everybody who bought a Richard Simmons Deal-A-Meal gadget or Groovin' with the Oldies weight loss videos off of television. You'll find everybody who bought an ab roller. You'll find a list from a catalog company of everybody who's bought some kind of weight loss nutrition product. You'll find the subscribers to Weight Watchers magazine. These kind of lists also have gender breakouts, so you can just get the women if you want them. They have age breakouts, so you can just get young or old. They have other breakouts, and of course you could get them just in Chicago. But what you would know about those lists is not only that they're overweight, but that they care because they have tried to do something about it. If you wanted the highest probability prospects, you'd take two or three of those lists and do what's called a merge purge and only take the dupes. So now I could wind up with a list of women between the ages of 32 and 55 who live in Chicago who have bought a Richard Simmons video, bought a fitness gadget, and bought a weight loss vitamin. Now I know they're overweight and they really care. Now, the more complex or sophisticated you get with this, the more expensive it is to do, but it's generally money well spent. So, for the sake of time, let's look at the third thing on our list very quickly. Harv, how am I doing?
Well, you're doing absolutely
fantastic. Like, how many minutes
here? We're going to spend about another 10 minutes.
Okay, great.
We'll talk about some materials and we'll go into questions.
Good. Okay, so the third thing on our list then is media. If we craft a great marketing message and if we figure out exactly who we wish to deliver it to and we discriminate against a whole bunch of people we don't want to deliver it to, now we face the issue of how do we deliver the message.